Why in a work situation or in a friend situation am I so premeditated and I think through what I'm going to say and out talk? I even counsel with other people like, hey, how should I talk to my boss about X? Mm-hmm. But then in our family situations, we're like, I'm going to wing it. I'm just going to go in there and see what happens.
That's so true.
Hey, it's Lisa. Tell me if you've had an experience like this. It's the holidays. You're gathered with family, friends, loved ones that you don't often get to see. There's laughter and mingling, a warm feeling of togetherness. And then someone makes a comment. The comment. I think I don't even have to give you a generic example here. You know what this looks like in your family. Suddenly, the lively conversation from just a moment ago about favorite movies and memories has been replaced with a chill in the air and an awkward discussion that you know from past experience is unlikely to end well. And if you know that feeling, you probably also know what it's like to get sucked into a conversation like that accidentally. Did you plan to talk about politics as you wrapped up your green bean casserole in foil an hour before? No. Were you mentally reviewing the finer points of your spirituality as you loaded everyone into the car, just in case someone you loved brought it up in a challenging way? Probably not. But there's something about a holiday gathering or an annual family event that brings out the hard topics where you either feel compelled to respond or completely disengage. That's uncomfortable. And it's also why I've got Emily Taylor here, a professional mediator who has all the tips for making our holidays contention-proof just in time for Thanksgiving. And I should say that with an asterisk. Will these tips and tricks keep your Aunt Mildred from saying something horribly offensive at the dinner table? No, they will not. That's out of our hands. But can you have peace of mind and know exactly what to say or do when she does? Yes. And that's what we're going to get into. Without further ado, let me introduce you to Emily Taylor.
I'm Emily DeSchweinitz Taylor. I recently finished my PhD in developmental psychology, so I guess I'm a psychologist, but not a clinical psychologist. I'm a mediator, and I work currently at one of the largest state universities as an ombuds, which is basically a conflict resolution person inside the university to help anyone on campus.
Now, before you think Emily was just born good at navigating conflict, you know, because she's a professional. If she does it for work, she must not be as conflict-averse as the rest of us. It's actually the opposite. Emily's career as a mediator and psychologist came about because of a midlife realization that these were skills she didn't have.
I had a strategy for my life, and that was to just be kind, kind of suck up the bad in social situations. And I thought I could digest it on my own. And in my early 40s, I just figured out that resentment actually doesn't just go away and that my efforts to be a kind person weren't always reciprocated. I would say maybe 60 to 70% of the time, but I needed to learn how to ask for what I needed and be a lot more direct with people who can't read my mind. I just thought somehow when I got married or had these close family relationships that people would be able to guess, and that wasn't the case, so I thought, let's figure this out. I want to learn how to negotiate. I want to learn how to persuade. And there were actually programs of study to do it when there hadn't been when I was in school.
So Emily sets off on a journey to learn about conflict, how to manage it, how to be persuasive, and how to stand up for herself and her needs in the scenarios where she hadn't been able to up to this point. Now, Emily has a lot of good advice, and I wanted to make this easy to remember. So I've distilled it into an acronym, GRAVY. See what I did there? One of the best parts of the Thanksgiving meal. I know, it's a hot take, but it can make or break the whole meal. I'm willing to discuss it. Anyway, one of the first things Emily learned in her journey is the G in gravy, and it has to do with the way you frame conflict as a whole.
I think we're taught that all conflict is bad, that somehow it should just be, it's like a fire. You just got to put it out as fast as possible. I see conflict now as differences that matter to one person or another. It's like a bump. I'm walking down the road and I bump against you. It doesn't mean we have to have a fight about it. It just means we're different. We're going in different directions. I have a different opinion from you. So conflict isn't bad, but contention, when I have some kind of hostility or aggression against you because of the bump, that's what we should be avoiding. But differences of opinion or lifestyle, that's just life. And so it's going to happen for the rest of our lives every day. So just kind of get used to it and see it as natural, but then learn some skills to navigate it.
G stands for get used to conflict. And I want to clarify that we're still talking about just conflict here, which is people disagreeing or having different opinions, lifestyles, and priorities. That's not the same thing as contention, fighting, belittling, name-calling. Nobody's saying that you have to get used to that. No. In this case, we're just talking about doing the work to view conflict as a natural everyday thing so that you can lean into conversations that matter instead of leaning away and maybe even feel less stress or adrenaline in your body when they come up. I've got some personal reasons why this is so important to me that I'll share at the end of the episode. But for now, I had to ask Emily, where do you start? If you want to talk about something that matters to you, especially if you haven't spoken up before, Emily says setting yourself up to succeed is all about creating the right context for the conversation based on the person you're talking to.
It can actually be trickier in the relationships that are closer, where if we have not asserted our opinion before and then we're suddenly trying to do it, we might need to, in a way, kind of prep someone and just basically ask permission. Say something like, say you've had this certain argument with a child or a spouse or, you know, a close friend, and all of a sudden you're like, I can't handle this anymore. I've got to bring something up. You might shock someone, but just say, hey, do you mind if I share a different perspective? This is a topic I've been thinking about a lot lately. Give the person an opportunity to say yes or no, because just because you're ready and you've thought about it a lot does not mean the other person is ready to have an intense conversation or to be confronted with a conflicting view. So I kind of like to buy time. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I may just say, hey, this is kind of a heavy topic, but do you have time right now? Or could we go on a walk later today or, you know, this weekend and just chat through it? Because it's just something that's been on my mind. But don't assume that it's on the other person's mind or that they want to talk about it. So you present what you want, but you leave a window open for when that is possible to take place. I don't know. I don't know if you've had
totally
that experience.
It's totally reasonable to do that. And I wish that is not the norm in how we deal with each other. It's like, I've got this. I want to talk about it right now.
Yes.
Or you walk into somebody's house and it's like, here we go. And you just, like, let me put my purse down and like, sit down. The R in gravy stands for right time, right place. And like Emily pointed out, this is a proactive step. You don't have to wait for the right opportunity to come along. You can intentionally make one by asking the other person to have the conversation and picking the time and setting together so no one is blindsided by a topic that normally gets avoided. And that principle extends to the conversation itself. The right time and right place means a setting where whoever's involved gets to opt in.
I also am a moderator for Braver Angels. It's just one of the many civic dialogue groups in our country right now. But something they talk about is, again, asking for permission. Just say, hey, this has been on my mind. Would you mind me asking questions? And that's different than all of a sudden saying, I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. We're not approaching a difficult conversation like that. If we ask for permission to have the conversation, we're actually going to listen first.
Pausing this just to highlight what Emily said here. Asking permission is a big part of right time, right place. If it's not right for everybody, it's not right at all. And like she said, you're not asking for permission to shut down someone or tell them why they're wrong. You're asking if it's okay to bring up the topic and have a dialogue so that you can ask more sincere questions. You may remember our conversation with Ava Weitzman from just a few episodes ago. Here is a great opportunity for that peacemaking curiosity. Listening is essential.
That's our piece of goodwill where we start a conversation. So if they say yes, then you could just say, hey, I'm just going to listen to kind of how you see the issue first. And then I'd love to share some of my own thoughts. And if we don't agree, that's totally fine. I mostly hang out with people who think similarly to me. So I'm just wondering if I can have a chance to hear how you see it, because I know you've expressed different opinions in the past. So then we can enter into the conversation, but I have to show I'm listening. If I'm just, all of us, we know that feeling of when someone, you're listening, but you're not really listening. You're actually just gathering data points about how you're going to respond, right? And you're like, I'm biting my tongue. Mm-hmm. People know.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything, but people can tell whether you're actually listening or not.
People know if you're listening or not. The same way you know when you see that glazed look in your teenager's eyes, whether or not they heard you ask them to move the growing colony of their shoes back to where they go instead of where they are now, which is liberally scattered in the front door where you have tripped over them twice. Totally hypothetical. Anyway, you can't fake listening when the topic is close to home, and you don't want to. This is a huge part of what makes the difference between conflict and contention. The next point in our acronym is acknowledge. Listening closely will allow you to put someone else's viewpoint into your own words, and that's how they'll know you heard them. This isn't just a conversational tool. It creates empathy that will strengthen your relationship and makes this kind of dialogue feel worth it. Listen so that you can precisely acknowledge the other person's feelings and beliefs. And then when it's your turn to share, keep it personal.
If you're the peacemaker, you're actually going to say, I can see you see it like this, and then summarize what you've heard, and then say, from my perspective, this is how I see it. So don't just suck it up and pretend that you can just listen to everybody else's opinions, but you never get to share what you think. Share what you think, but don't make it like an attack. Just say, you know, from my perspective, I grew up in, you know, say, California with immigration. It was just a constant thing. It wasn't something that seemed like abnormal to have people from all these different countries around me. So I just took that as normal. I'm wondering, because you grew up in Texas, what was that like living so close to the border? Were there certain tensions? And then you always try to share personal experiences and you try to get the other person to share personal experiences. And you do that specifically because there's a logic that comes to like a political view or, you know, some kind of difference when you hear people's experiences. Like I remember talking to this guy and he was a first generation American. I think he was from Mexico, but he was pro-gun, but he was also pro-immigration. He was just kind of an interesting mix of political views that don't like fit neatly into a party. But once I heard his story of crossing the border and then trying to make a life in America, it all started to make sense. I'm like, oh, of course you have these kind of views on these different topics. So allow the other person to explain their logic, but don't stop there. Explain your logic from your own perspective. So it's not really like my party says such. This is what I've lived. This is how I see it.
I like that setup for a conversation because it's so respectful and gives everybody a turn. It's almost like parliamentary procedure, right? Like everybody makes fun of it in a meeting and things like that. Like I still do. But it gives a cue and I think calms everyone down to say, this is the time to listen. Now this is the time to respond.
Yes.
And I feel like my mind is racing, like going back to like what I learned about in debate, you know, in high school and things like that of presenting one side and then and taking turns. It seems that in our society, we have lost that art form of, of dialogue.
Yes. Well, we live in a society right now that we don't have very many social norms that are accepted by everyone.
Yeah.
So we're kind of like, when we're at a loss, we just stop talking. But that's actually the worst thing we can do is to stop talking. Arthur Brooks said, we don't need to disagree less. We need to disagree better. So again, I think people just end up taking one or the other. They're like, okay, I'm going to be a peacemaker. So I'm just going to listen to everybody. But then I never say what I think. But what we need is dialogue. We don't just need someone like on a platform, like social media, just saying, this is how I see it. We actually need the exchange. So we have to practice listening, but we also have to practice speaking in a way that's not volatile, that's not going to provoke other people. But we're just sharing our experiences. I think that's how you weave a society together, and it's going to be one interaction at a time.
I love this clarification about what makes the difference. It's not silence, And it's actually not just sharing either. It's the exchange. Like Emily said, it's the back and forth dialogue in a setting where we're committed to valuing and acknowledging each other's opinions. Those interactions are what allow conflict to be natural and productive rather than traumatic. But what happens when that setting doesn't exist? Like, for example, Emily just mentioned social media, and I think we've all seen conflict turn into contention there. But it's also possible that you could start a conversation that takes a turn. You might be committed to a curious, balanced exchange, and the person you're talking to might not be playing by those rules. What do you do when you feel like you're being attacked for your views or when you're the only one doing any peacemaking? Emily has some strategies for exactly this kind of scenario.
I think the first thing is to clarify what you heard the other person say and allow them to correct you. So I might say, so I heard you saying about immigration that you think the restrictions should be tougher and that we should send more people back. And the other person will be like, no, 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 that's not what I meant exactly. I just think it takes too long. The whole process needs to be revised. I'm like, okay, so you're seeing it as it needs to be revised. Is there anything else like that you think kind of along those lines? And then they can add in something. But if someone is truly like, if they're attacking you, if they're like, you're a bigot, you're going to have to actually say, I'm not comfortable with how you're talking about this topic. Can you explain a little bit more? And maybe if someone's got that heated and they're kind of in the accusing mode, maybe they can calm down and they can explain themselves. Just say, hey, you know, if we're going to have this conversation, two things, like, let's not interrupt each other and let's avoid blaming and accusing. If they'll agree to the rules, like the parliamentary rules,
you know,
then we can make progress. But otherwise, you probably need to exit that conversation.
Yeah.
That's a different situation.
If you're interested in engaging and having a conflict resolution, it's with the assumption that both people want that.
Yeah, sometimes they don't. So I think when you go in, know that you might need an exit. So you go in with prepared saying, you know what, I don't think we're going to solve world peace today. Or, you know, this was a tough conversation. I appreciate you, us trying to do it, but I don't think that is the right time. This is the right
time. But also, what TV are you watching? Something a little bit, you know, like change the subject, right?
Oh. Well,
like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't know.
Something lighter or a different topic. I think if someone becomes abusive, address it. Like, we're not getting into the blame game. Just say, you know what? I'm not comfortable with how this conversation is going. I'd be happy to talk about another topic, but this one, I think I'm done for now.
And I think this speaks to the value of in-person conversations because that's not done on social media.
Yes.
It's not done over text, right?
Yes. Yeah, those are more like, that's like having a megaphone and just saying what you think.
Yeah, it's not as interesting.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
I mean, even doing this conversation, I find it way better in person.
Yeah.
There's so many other cues that I get in a conversation besides just your voice or just focusing on those words.
The V in our conflict savvy gravy is for voice boundaries. In this case, we were talking about parliamentary rules. I like how Emily uses the language blame game in her example. She's naming the thing, the inappropriate tactic in the conversation, and her feelings about it. I don't feel comfortable with that. It's an assertive way to respond that also leaves the door open if someone is willing to play by the rules later. And it didn't even sound like a criticism. Hey, we're not doing that. Our feelings are going to get hurt. Let's pick this up later when we've cooled down. Voice boundaries out loud. And this gets especially important if you find yourself in the situation we were imagining at the beginning of this episode, the classic holiday family debate. I had to ask Emily about that, and she had some great tools for voicing and holding boundaries in these situations too. I'm curious of what your perspective is of when conflicts arise or you anticipate conflicts when there is maybe like an emotionally charged holiday situation.
Sure. Well,
isn't that a funny way of saying like Thanksgiving dinner? But I wanted to keep it like more open.
Yeah, yeah. Right? Well, Thanksgiving or any holiday. In any group situation or say a group conflict situation, it's usually not everybody that gets into an argument. It's usually actually just a few key figures that stir the pot and make it kind of
There are names coming to mind.
Exactly.
Right now.
But one thing that I've really focused on during the past several years is why in a work situation or in a friend situation am I so premeditated and I think through what I'm going to say and I kind of study it out, talk. I even counsel with other people like, hey, how should I talk to my boss about X? Mm-hmm. But then in our family situations, we're like, I'm going to wing it. I'm just going to go in there and see what happens.
That's so true.
No, it's true. And it's really strange if you think about it, because your family relationships tend to be the longest, the most important, the most intimate. And then somehow we're like, I'm just going to go in there and see what happens. You know, Uncle Bill is going to start talking about X and he always does. And I'm just going to see what happens. Like, it's kind of like, I'm just going to throw a firecracker in there and just, you know, I know they usually light up. So like, use your knowledge. So I get excited about that because I have had to tame my own beast in terms of, you know what this conversation could look like. You've already had experience. Use your experience. So if I know like a certain uncle or a cousin, this is how they love to get the ball rolling on the certain topics, come in prepared. Like, if I don't want to talk about it, I've actually practiced a little phrase, said, that sounds super interesting. I don't think I want to engage in that during our dinner. If you want to take a walk later, but you don't say it unless you actually want to do it. If you don't want to get in that conversation.
Yeah, because if anybody's going to call your bluff, it's going to be your family.
Exactly.
They want to push your buttons. That's how I am with my siblings.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you want to go there? Okay. You know? I mean, in a fun way, but
yeah,
still.
Yeah. And there's something to, again, like, as I get older and like my age group of siblings is kind of running the show, it's not as much the older parents. Mm-hmm. They're there, but not necessarily directing the state of affairs of the family. Have an understanding, like whoever's hosting, you kind of get to set the rules. You know, like you're all at my house. Hey guys, let's keep it cool. We don't need to talk about politics tonight. If you want to do that separately, that's fine. But let's just focus on, you know, being together and the things we have in common. It sounds weird, or it sounds simple when I say it, but it's a little bit different, like if you're the actual host and people may be like, wow, like, why does she think we're going to do that? Mm-hmm. But if you know that that's what usually happens, just steer the boat a little bit. And then if it comes up, then you can easily say, hey, remember how I was talking about, let's just not do politics at the whole table with everybody. We're in mixed company or whatever it is. Like, you can make a joke if it's appropriate,
yeah.
But I think just be a little bit more not winging it, more insightful about the people who are actually going to be there. And then the individuals can choose if they want to do it or not, but not necessarily at the table.
I love it. What do you wish everybody knew as a conflict resolution mediator that most people don't as we head into the holiday season?
First off, you need to know what you think yourself about topics. I think a lot of times we're caught off guard. So again, there's that part of knowing who the people are in a situation that's potentially full of conflict. But I've had to spend some time even just figuring out what I think myself. Sometimes conflict is started because I'm not really sure. I'm a very verbal person, so I actually figure out what I think through conversation. So I may start off with a thought and then I want to correct myself. So allow others and yourself to correct yourself and be like, you know what? I said that. That's not actually what I think anymore. I'm not a flip-flopper. I'm just a learner. I change. But I think the first part of conflict is actually inside. So if someone tries to set you off, but you already know what you think and you're peaceful about it, they don't really have power over you. So conflict, I guess the peace part starts inside, that you're not in internal conflict. I think a lot of us maybe are in internal conflict. So when somebody says something that kind of triggers us, it's because it's triggering an internal conflict. So that's kind of what I would say is focus on the internal first, and then the external has far less provocative power to set you aflame.
I love this point so much. All of this advice from Emily Taylor is so good, but I especially love this one because isn't one of the hardest parts about Thanksgiving conflict that it feels out of your control? All of the thought that went into gathering the people, planning the meal, keeping up traditions, and of course, the whole event is based on gratitude, which implies that we're all on our best behavior because we're just so grateful, right? Right? That was the goal anyway. And it's frustrating
happening when that plan seems to be thwarted by someone hijacking the event as their platform. But Emily says you can be prepared for this by handling your inner conflict first. Know what you think so you're not distracted by confusion or challenges to your viewpoint. That will make it easier to not get sucked into a conversation that's going to turn to contention. The more I think about this, the more I realize holiday dinners are basically improv. You're thinking on your feet. There's an audience. Hopefully you're on stage with people you like who will back you up. And even though everything is made up on the spot, you can still prepare for it. That's why the Y in our gravy acronym is for yes and. As you're putting this gravy together, G, getting used to conflict by engaging, redirecting dialogue into R, right time, right place settings where conflict won't drive a wedge into the relationship, aka not in front of the group, A, acknowledging the personal feelings on both sides, and V, voicing boundaries, you don't have to do this alone. Gather some allies who can support you when you're laying or enforcing the ground rules. When you're saying, hey, this is an important conversation. We're not going to have it at the table, but I care what you think, and I'd love to go on a walk later so we can do it justice. Let's save this for a better time. A little prep work with your own opinions and thoughts, if possible, other people in the room, will make it easier to why, yes, and whatever is thrown your way on the day of. Gravy is a skill. It takes practice and failure and trying again and all those other aspects of learning. If you're like me, it's still not as comfortable as I wish it was, but it's worth it. And on a personal note, let me tell you why I believe that. Over the last few years, I've come to understand that the conflict coping skills of my family of origin weren't going to work between me and my kids. And if you have older kids, you probably know what I'm talking about with this generation. They speak a different language, and it's bigger than just, Mom, why are you so mad? What? I'm not mad. You put a period at the end of your sentences in a text. Everyone knows that means you're furious. That's a real example, by the way. Several of my kids have gotten involved, and I'll be honest, I don't know if I can stop using punctuation in my texts. It's the English teacher in me, but now they understand it's not personal. But I digress. I've explained it all to my kids. Now they understand my intent. But there are a lot of people in my life that I love, mostly my generation and older, who have successfully adopted a practice of avoiding conflict by just never talking about the things we disagree about. And like, don't get me wrong, there's a reason we do that. Kudos to them. Those unspoken boundaries keep the peace. Everyone's content, and it allows certain relationships to continue. But these kids are different. I'm different. This generation talks about their feelings and doesn't tolerate stuffing them down. When my relatives avoid disagreeing with me, I know they're doing it out of love. If I do that to my kids, they feel dismissed and unseen. And so that makes the skills Emily is talking about even more important. Because if you don't have any tools or ground rules or experience with conflict as a natural part of life, then of course it feels like the best option is to never talk about the things that matter to you. And I really think that for Gen X, we have the time and plasticity to learn some new skills and do it better, because of course we have to do everything. I want to have this deep relationship with my kids where we don't have to tiptoe around our ideological differences or avoid conversations about our opinions and beliefs. And I think they want that from me. Unconditional love embraces complexity, differences, and conflict. Actually, conflict is inevitable. For me, this isn't just about more peace or less contention. It's about having the skills to embrace other people in the way that I believe my Savior embraces and loves me, without needing me to change before I'm worthy of that love. Hey, have a happy Thanksgiving. I'm grateful for clever acronyms that can help me keep my cool in the moment and understand what it is that we're trying to do, which is just create more love and be together. Listen, even if you fail, you're doing the work. The rest is gravy.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley with help from Blake Morse and Kenny Mears, with post-production by Gracie Davis. For more information on our guest, Emily Taylor, links to her book, Conflict Fluent, and links to her website will be in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including the Council of Moms. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.
If you're looking for a podcast the whole family can enjoy, check out this new show, Constant Wonder Kids. It takes stories from the BYU Radio original podcast, Constant Wonder, and transforms them so kids can join in on the adventure. Constant Wonder Kids turns everyday moments into extraordinary nature explorations designed for curious kids and the grown-ups who love them. Together, you can discover fascinating facts and true stories about amazing people doing incredible things in nature. So join us as we dive deep into the ocean and meet an unexpectedly friendly whale shark, or cheer for tiny athletes at the International Hedgehog Olympic Games. Yeah, that's a thing. Constant Wonder Kids is perfect for road trips, bedtime listening, or when your brain's got an itch that needs to be scratched. New episodes drop Mondays, so tune in to Constant Wonder Kids on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.